Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yay! It's me, Robin Lundberg, here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Get to my NFL picks for the week in just a second. But, you know, the show, as I say, is as much about you as me. No, that's not what I say. I say it's a lot about you. It's more about me, but not by too much. 60-40. I got to give myself the controlling interest of the show. I hope you understand. But since plenty of you guys still want to talk about some of the stuff we've covered, let's do that now. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Hey, everyone, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance too? Get it all at geico.com. Robert in South Carolina. Robert, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Robin, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. It's a little chilly, but I'm making it. So I'll get you know, right to it. I listen all the time, and I've heard quite a bit of discussion about the relevancy of the bowl games. And I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the first Saturday of the bowl games. There's a bunch of games on today, and you know, like many people, I won't be watching any of them. You know, my first point is, I do think the bowl games are kind of watered down. I do think there's just too many of them to make, you know, the bowl games, you know, really interesting, make it, you know, like something, you know, a feel good, you know, for a lot of teams that, you know, really had success. I think 500, you know, a 6-win season is, you know, to me, not really anything to, you know, get excited about. But more importantly, I wanted to talk about, you know, the, you know, importance of a bowl game for, you know, some players like, you know, a lot of people are talking about Deebo Samuel not playing in you know, USC's bowl game. I personally do think it's you know, sad that he's you know, making the decision not to play. And some people, you know, say that, you know, it's a smart decision, he'd get hurt, you know, so on and so forth. But the reality of the situation is, you know, there's only so much film, so much opportunity that NFL teams have had to really watch Deebo Samuel, you know, perform. And a bowl game like, you know, what USC's playing in is really an opportunity for another opportunity for Deebo to show his skill set and potentially raise his draft stock.
I think in this case, like, guys probably don't make that decision if they don't have a good idea of where they're projected. And to me, this is one of those things that's an individual decision. Like, if you decide to play in the game, I'm not going to blame you. I understand, you know, you played that long to get there, and you want to go through to the end. If you decide not to play in the game, I also understand, look, you got a professional career to think about. You got your safety to think about. So I think that's an individual decision, and I wouldn't really criticize anybody for it either way, personally.
I do see where you're coming from, but if you just rewind it a little bit more, I mean, you know, why play in the Clemson game? You're likely to, you could get hurt in the Clemson game just as much as you are
because the bowl game doesn't count. Like, that's why. I mean, in some of these other games, when the season's still going along, you're you know, at theoretically playing for something. You know, even. I guess you can make the argument some of these teams have losses and they're not going to make the playoffs or whatnot. But there's a little bit of a difference when it comes to the bowl game, simply because it's not even in your regular schedule. It's like I say, when I say an exhibition game, it's like an extra game. It's an extra game, but it happens to be an exhibition game, not a playoff game. So why play the extra game that's an exhibition game? If you want to, cool. But I understand why guys don't. Brandon in Dallas. Brandon, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, Robin. How's it going, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. This is actually the first time I'm listening to your show. I normally listen to everybody else, but
listeners.
Wait, what? This is the first time you normally listen to everybody but me? Is that what you said?
I had no idea who you were. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And I'm up early this morning on a Saturday, and I'm a tolo for sure. And
you should have phrased that. I hadn't had a chance to catch your show before, but all good. Go ahead.
Thanks, man. Hey, I just wanted to touch on the boxing real quick. Uh-huh. And I know you had talked about podcasts earlier, how they're being podcasts for everything.
Yeah.
I'd really like to encourage people to check out the Joe Rogan and Tyson Fury podcast. It talks about what he was going through. He started off as a young kid, and he set out to do one thing, and that was to be the heavyweight champion. And he did that, and he got it taken away from him from a technicality, and then went into a huge depression and almost committed suicide and ended up having, I don't know, something come over him and decided to get back into boxing and to take out Tyson Wilder. Well, what encouraged me and what was so inspiring was their competition between one another. Wilder encouraging him to continue to train and fight and get ready for everything. It was really genuine. The way that they boxed together, not at all being a physical match, but also a mental one. And I just kind of want to use that as a segue as well. I'll let you comment, but I do want to talk about one more thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sorry, pal. So I want to use that as a segue also to talk about the Cowboys, because Cowboys are obviously going to win the Super Bowl. But just like boxing, these guys do really basic things, getting back to basics, and it's all fundamentals, but they're really sharp at what they're doing. So
it's the professional level, right? I mean, some of those guys are going to be able to do it. I appreciate the call, man, and thanks for listening. But it's kind of hilarious to me that you first say, I listen to everybody else. But you, the first time I've heard you, but I've heard everybody else, and then I'm going to let you finish during the same call. Yeah, I think so. How about Derek in New York? Derek, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
Hey, I like your show. You have not heard me. I've been a frequent caller in the past, but unfortunately, I won't get into the details, but your station was removed from my area, so now I listen online. But, you know, what springs eternal as fans, and I know it sounds ludicrous. I'm an older guy. I have an elongated view of pro football. I've been watching since the early 60s. I'm 61, almost 61 years old. And we have hope now that we didn't have years ago because of the way the playoff structure is. The same thing in baseball with the wild cards. And as far-fetched as it seems, you got to laugh, I know, at that Cowboy fan. And I can't stand the Cowboys. Cowboys are one of those teams you love or hate. And I live in the New York area, you know, Schenectady, New York, and I can't stand the Giants, but they still have a prayer. I run a Green Bay Packer fan club, and the Packers can make it, and I'm going to explain briefly how and why. I do think they beat the Bears tomorrow. I think the Bears are coming off a real high with the Rams, and I think Minnesota is in trouble. They got all kinds of issues. Minnesota has to lose one of their last remaining games. They play home to the Dolphins, they play at Detroit, and they play at the Bears. They play home to the Bears, but I don't think they'll win that game anyway because I think the Bears are going to want it for seeding. The Packers, meanwhile, if they can beat Chicago, and I think they will, they go to the Jets, and then they finish with Detroit. The other remaining teams, Carolina, Washington, and Eagles, look at their schedule. They're brutal. All they need to do is lose one game, and I think all of those teams will. Maybe even this Sunday, they'll all lose them. You know, the Eagles, I think, will lose to the Rams. I think the Skins are done, and I think who's the other team to play? Carolina will lose to the Saints. So I think all those teams winning, the Packers' path is clear, and I do think they make it in at 8-7-1.
Well, that would be very, very interesting if that happened, a turn of events, but a natural segue into my NFL picks. I appreciate that guy's scenario, but he and I differ because I think the Bears are going to beat the Packers. I've got the Bears -5 over Green Bay. Bears, this to me, they may have had a high from winning, but they're a better team, and I don't think you're going to have any motivation questions going up against Green Bay after they blew that game in week 1. Remember week 1, that was the high point of Green Bay's season. Historically, they've been beaten by Aaron Rodgers in recent years. I think at home, Chicago takes care of business in that one. Next up, give me the Texans -6.5 over the Jets. You know, the Texans' winning streak was ended last week. Eventually, it was going to end. I was riding them until it ended. paid for it last week, but in the grand scheme of things, that had to come to an end. It's the kind of thing that can refocus you, and so can the New York Jets, who are terrible. So I just, that spread almost seems too good to be true to me. The Texans, I think, beat the Jets by more than a touchdown. They right their ship again. They're one of the better teams in the NFL at this moment. So you give me one of the better teams in the NFL against one of the worst teams in the NFL, makes this job kind of easy. Next up, I've been high on Dallas as of late. I'll stay there, +3 over Indy. You know, Dallas doesn't have the season sewn up just yet. They have to get a couple more wins under their belt. The Colts are a weird team. They're a little bit better than maybe we give them credit for because, you know, they are 7-6 on the season. That's only one game difference between Dallas. I feel like they're one of the two teams in that division, Indy and Tennessee, feel like two of the harder teams to get a read on this year, where you can't decide whether they're good or bad. And the Colts had been on a nice winning streak before they got blanked by the Jaguars 6-0. Then they bounced back with the game at the Texans. But the Cowboys defense, to me, is going to give them problems. So give me Dallas over Indy with the points. Also, a team that's playing well and getting points, Cleveland, +4 over Denver. I like what they've been doing with Baker Mayfield at the helm. I know the Broncos have been playing better. I know that's a tough spot to go to. I know defensively it's a tough team to play against, but getting that 4 points, I think those are kind of evenly matched teams. I'll take the Browns. And finally, who knew I'd be making this sort of... Well, I got two more, actually. I'll do two more. Penultimately, who knew I'd be picking this team? Anytime I can use the word penultimate, I like to do it. Before the season in any game, Buffalo over Detroit. The Bills are firmly mediocre all of a sudden now instead of horror bad, which is the same class as the Lions. I like the way the Bills defense is playing. So give me the Bills over the Lions. And finally, Baltimore -7.5 over Tampa. Seems like a bit of a big spread for Baltimore, considering they're not exactly playing a high-powered offensive style, but they're playing for their playoff lives. They have had some big wins this season by wide margins. So I think having made that quarterback change, being comfortable in what they're doing and seeing Tampa is all a good combination for the Ravens in that one.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's get right into it. Joined now by Eric Edholm, NFL writer for Pro Football Weekly. And Eric, I was just doing my picks for the week, and one game noticeably absent was New England and Pittsburgh because I don't know who to pick in that game. And we're at the time of year where there's like games that people will call big games, and there's legitimately big games. Like, for instance, to me, the Chargers and the Chiefs is a great matchup. I don't think it was a huge game. It's a big one because there's some home field repercussions and the like, but nobody's playoff lives are on the line. This one, to me, is a legitimately big game because, obviously, the Steelers could be knocked out of the playoffs, and the Patriots are playing for what could be their playoff fortunes as far as their road. Do you have any early read on that game?
Well, my first early read is if you're counting on me for any kind of handicapping advice, I would say steer clear. However, I think your point is absolutely true. I mean, just the recent history, too, with these teams and the fact last year that it came down to such a controversial call, the Jesse James play, the fumble not fall, or the catch not catch, I should say, at the goal line there. You know, Steelers were the dominant team in that game and losing Brown and everything. It was sort of crazy how it unfolded. And now you've got these two teams this season that I think most people agree are good football teams, largely. But we also can easily sort of poke holes in them and say, hey, look, the Steelers just don't have it this season. Brady's been fine, but he hasn't been Brady. You know, there's still things holding both those two teams back. But I would say the general consensus is that, you know, the Patriots are still kind of their daddy, if you want to use that Pedro Martinez lingo. I mean, until further notice, their dominance over them in recent games, even with last year's close one, you know, has to, I think, be considered.
For sure. Why do you think that is? But I mean, the Patriots have been dominant over everybody, so you could sort of just say that. But it feels odd with the Steelers because the Steelers have been so excellent across the board for so long. You know, they've never had a losing season under Mike Tomlin. They've got like I don't know how many double-digit win seasons since the guy's been there a ton. Why is it specifically head-to-head that you think New England has owned Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, Bill Belichick's defensive philosophy is let's take away the thing that they do best. Let's take away their best. If you want to check down all day to your tight end or your backup running back or this other guy, even a pretty good receiver or something, we'll let you do it. I think doing that has kind of thrown them off the rhythm. Not that Pittsburgh doesn't have every year seemingly multiple weapons, you know, whether it's Juju, whether it's Antonio Brown. You know, last year, you know, they Jesse James kind of emerged as a receiver in that game. Obviously, we knew what Le'Veon Bell did in the past to what James Conner is doing now. I think what they do is they watch and say, what do they do in high leverage situations? Third down, fourth quarter, you know, game on the line, close situation, got to have it. Who are the guys they throw the ball to? Who are the guys they give it to? We're going to make sure we make it very difficult on them. And plus, I can also think of a handful of occasions where Mike Tomlin didn't get super aggressive. It was their one game a couple years back, and, you know, he's settling for field goals. I thought that was an odd approach. So Tomlin's game plan, you know, game management at times has been a little off in those games.
Robin Lundberg talking to Eric Edholm, NFL writer for Pro Football Weekly here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, you mentioned Le'Veon Bell and James Conner. Most of the story this season has been, look at what James Conner's doing. You know, the Steelers don't need Le'Veon Bell. It sort of feels like in recent weeks that may have flipped a little bit. Are we starting to see what the Steelers are missing without Le'Veon Bell?
Well, obviously, if you have both guys, you know, what a luxury that would be, and it would really afford them the ability to rest Conner and, you know, give Bell his chance now, and wouldn't that be fascinating, right? Wouldn't that be a different team? But, you know, obviously it wasn't meant to be. They couldn't come to, you know, to common ground on this contract. So, yeah, I do feel like even before Conner was out with the injury, you know, he had the drop at the end of that game against Jacksonville. Didn't end up mattering. They still won. You know, he had a couple other situations where he, you know, came up a little short, but he's had a fantastic season too. And I think there's still some modicum of confidence that he might even be able to play Sunday. I don't think he will, but you never know. He's listed as questionable. He's going to try to go, I think. So whether it's this week or next, I think, you know, obviously he could be back in the picture there, but you're right. I mean, there's so much on the line for the Steelers team that even the slightest of differences could really cost them such a big game.
I think it's in the passing game more so than in the running game. Now, sure. When you talked about Tom Brady, you mentioned he's been good, but he hasn't been exactly Tom Brady. And it feels like we've played this game over the last several years where it's sort of like, guess when the decline of Brady is coming.
Yeah.
And then it gets thrown in our face, but then there's a chance to maybe see it again. You know, do you believe, because it's going to happen, do you believe we could be seeing it, or do you believe we're going to see typical Brady the rest of the season?
Yeah, I feel like this is, you know, like the uncle or something that you never got along with, and you see him at family parties, and you're like, you know, he's got like three more gray hairs than last year.
Yeah.
Oop, I saw him having trouble bending over for that spoon. You know, we're looking pretty hard for it, right? I understand that he hasn't been his MVP self this season. You know, Gronk and his ailments certainly have caused some issues there. Adding, you know, not having Edelman first four games, adding Josh Gordon in the middle of the season. It's just tough stuff, takes time to develop, you know. And Brady, in years past, before he kind of stayed away from all the team activities this offseason, really prided himself on spending, you know, extra time with his receivers. You know, he'd host them out in California or wherever, or, you know, they'd go find a place and go work out together. Brady didn't really have that this season. He didn't really have that as much as he normally does. So possibly that stuff caught up to him a little bit at first. But you watch him last week, outside of the last 30 seconds of the first half, when he took the sack and, you know, blew the points and everything, and that was a bad play by Brady. Outside of that, he was really great. So he made probably two of the five best throws he's made all season in that game against Miami, and they just happened to lose.
Yeah, and something happened at the end of that game. What happened at the end of that game? There was like a play.
Yeah, that miracle that was looks pretty good. If the Patriots make two field goals and an extra point, it doesn't even happen. It's kind of crazy to think that could come down to that.
It's amazing because they never lose those kind of games, right?
I know.
Somehow they're always on the other end of it. And they have the game without a penalty, and yet they had a game with a couple of mistakes, and it feels so foreign. People are like, we have to call Belichick to task for this one.
Hey, listen, whatever opportunities people get, they're going to pounce on them because they are so few, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Erica, appreciate your time this morning, man. Thank you.
Have a great day. Talk to you soon.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
Speaking of pop culture, I highly recommend Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Took my kids to see that Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. It was super sweet. I really enjoyed it. The animation is sick. The story has a lot of heart.
It's made, all right, don't go too much into it. I'm saving that for another one. So
it's made with a lot of love. Okay, I will get to apparently Spider-Man and everything else I have not coming up in just a few moments. But first, let's talk to you, Alan in Richmond. Alan, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
What's up, man?
What's going on, Alan? How are you, man?
Doing well. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you as well.
Yeah, I had some thoughts on the college football playoff structure.
Sure.
And so, I mean, right now, the FCS, unless things have changed and I'm unaware, they operate using a 16-team playoff, right?
The who?
Pretty sure. The FCS college teams, they use a 16-team playoff right now.
Okay.
Like right a step below FBS. So they already have that going in college, in a college system. So I'm just wondering, is it not possible to look for that model as far as expansion? I definitely don't think 16 is necessary for the FBS.
Oh, it's certainly possible. I think 8 is the right number, Alan. I was talking about this earlier. I feel like with 8, what you do is you don't take away the meaning of the regular season, which is part of what college football's appeal is how important the games are. You don't dilute the playoff either, right? So you get the teams that have business being in there, you get them all in there with nobody really on the outside looking in. You're always going to have a little bit of controversy, but you don't water it down to a certain degree. You can also extend it a little bit longer. To me, 8 feels like the sweet spot.
Yeah, but then also even you don't hear any – I don't hear anybody talking about, oh, the teams in FCS, they have so many games. Like, that's just a lot. Like, why do we only hear that with the FBS teams with regard to
how
much wear and tear?
Because they draw more attention. I mean, it's just an awareness thing. More people care. That's really all it is. Brandon in Birmingham. Brandon, you're up next from Alabama here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, man, what's going on?
What's good?
Nothing much. I got a couple things we should get rid of. My last one, I'm going to kind of talk about what you just were discussing, the college football playoff. But I think we should definitely get rid of Jerry Jones. okay. I think he's headed for the port.
Why are you getting rid of him? Just done with him?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think he needs to get out of the making decision roles and just sit up in the press box and enjoy his money because I'm tired of watching my team lose. I mean, he gets old. He should be making decisions at all.
No, I would argue the Cowboys are doing okay at the moment. I would get rid of Jerry Jones for other reasons than Cowboys-related things, but okay. What else?
Yeah. You know, and like his remarks, I'm a monkey fan. So, yeah, just he in general. But anyway, going to the next one, I think it's kind of silly. If it's kind of like a known factor that a team is going to get into the victory formation, there's no way that the clock can stop. You know, they're not going to run. I think we should just do away with it. I think they should just turn to the ref and say, look, to avoid injury, you know they can't make a stop. We're going to run the clock out, victory formation, that we're done. That one play, I just think it's just really silly. But what's your opinion on that?
You know what? I never thought of it like that. Is there, you know, could you make it so they had to run a play so that there's a chance something happens? I mean, you can't really do that, right? Well, why can't you just take a knee if you want? It never really bothered me. I you know, we sort of know the time situation and score. I never thought sitting there, why are you doing this? Or just run the clock down. It's fine. Doesn't bother me. Conrad in Milwaukee. Conrad, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, buddy. Thanks for taking my call. 18 playoff, I'm all in, but I cannot lose my conference championships because that's how you're going to get those at-large bids, the 7th and 8th seed in the playoff. Those are not going to be just like, you know, you're going to have maybe 5 division winners, but then if you have a division winner that's like got 3 losses, let's say that Notre Dame or they don't have a conference championship, but like a Northwestern rather, let's say they don't have like all those losses they had, but they had some really good wins, but they win their division, that's where you're going to get that 7th and 8th seed. So I'm all in on the conference championships forever, but I need that eight team playoff. That's all I got, Robin. Have a good one.
There you go. I'm down with that. Like I said before, it seems just about right to me. All right, time to get to everything I have. Anthony, what's up first? Here I am again. How many times do I get introduced in one show? It's me again for the 10th time today, Robin Lundberg. What's up?
You love it.
Wait, who said I didn't?
So Kirk Cousins took ownership for the Vikings' struggles on offense this past week, and he said that their offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, wouldn't have been fired if he had played to his fullest potential. Do we have enough evidence now, Robin, to prove that Kirk Cousins is not a franchise quarterback?
Yes, he's not a franchise quarterback. You know what we really struggle with is defining quarterbacks who are fine. You know, and that's like another Kirk. I said it with Dak Prescott before. Kirk Cousins kind of there. He's like fine. He's not going to elevate you. He's not going to destroy you. And we have a lot of trouble with those guys. The problem with Cousins is he got that huge contract. So people are going to hold that against him. But overall, as a player, I mean, the line in Minnesota has not been great this year. And Cousins has certainly not been great this year either. But neither has he been terrible. So he falls in that weird territory, like I just said, where we have a real problem. It's easy for us when the guy is a bum. We just, you know, say, this guy's terrible, get him out of the league. It's easy for us when the guy is great. We just say, hey, I can't believe how great this guy is. Woohoo! It's very tough for us when the guy is fine because we can't take either one of those positions. And people continue to try to do one or the other. They continue to try and elevate the guy who's not so great or destroy the guy who's good enough that he shouldn't be destroyed. And to me, Kirk Cousins is somebody that falls into that. He's starting NFL quarterback, not more, not less.
So you had mentioned this earlier that the Ravens announced on Wednesday that Lamar Jackson would start ahead of Joe Flacco, who has recovered from a hip injury against Tampa on Sunday. But are the Ravens making the right decision to stick with Lamar Jackson?
Yes. Look, Joe Flacco's not a part of their future. They already made the switch. You don't get these like natural opportunities that often, right? Like how often does it present yourself and it's so seamless where it didn't feel like they embarrassed Flacco in the way this happened? You could do that, and he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback for your team. It didn't feel like they rushed Lamar Jackson in. It felt like it was sort of like life told them that this was the right time for this to happen. So I can't complain with the way they handled it. I think they've actually handled it fairly flawlessly. And now that they got Jackson in there, he's gotten some games under his belt. They've won those games for the most part. I think they're 3-1 with him as a starter, with the one being a narrow loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. He's the young guy. He's the possible future of the team. It doesn't make any sense to look back at this point. And then, you know, if anything happens with Jackson, you know, you have somebody who's been to the dance before behind him. So I think, you know, obviously Flacco's not going to love that, and he may want to look for a new destination beyond this season. But I don't think they did him wrong in this case, and it feels like they handled everything pretty much exactly right.
As a caller noted earlier, the city of Oakland, they filed a breach of contract lawsuit against the Raiders and the NFL over the team leaving for Vegas. And according to one report, no way will the Raiders play in Oakland next season after this lawsuit was filed. So, Robin, is this indeed the Raiders' final season in Oakland? And where do you think they will actually play next season?
I have no idea. How am I supposed to know the answer to this? Like, honestly, no, nobody, who knows what's going on here? To me, it is inexplicable that a company as big as the NFL and a franchise as big as the Raiders could make this decision to move and this could still be up in the air. How is that possible? Like, when you go through with this and you say, all right, we're going to Vegas or whatnot, you do not have the plan of action in place in the meantime? That's crazy to me. Like, they're going for 2 years, whatever it is in the future, and not have any idea what the now. It doesn't surprise me that it's the Raiders, right? It feels very on brand for the Raiders this year. I don't know if Gruden was in charge of the franchise relocation. I don't know if I'd put that on him, but it sure feels very Gruden-esque at the moment. So, yeah, I don't know, dude. I really don't know. It's a very strange thing.
Yeah, reportedly there are 5 or 6 cities being discussed where they already house NFL teams, but that could be a possibility for the Raiders, so that will be interesting. As you had brought up with Eric Edholm, our guest in the last segment, some discussion about Tom Brady and Father Time is catching up to him. NFL Hall of Famer Warren Moon says Tom Brady's stats show that deterioration is coming. So do you agree that Father Time is finally catching up to the 41-year-old?
I can't. I would love for the Patriots' downfall to happen. I can't be the guy who says it, though. I don't need to be the guy who says it, I guess. And you know, Brady has earned, as a player, Brady has earned every benefit of the doubt. So he's going to get my benefit of the doubt right now. When it happens, I'll say it. When it's clear, when it's apparent, when it's transpiring in front of our face, I will say it. Clearly, there's going to be some degree of it. But this guy was in the Super Bowl last year. He won the Super Bowl the year before. His team is going to the playoffs with another chance to get to the Super Bowl as we speak. I'm not writing him off right now in this moment. That doesn't feel like, now does not feel like the time. You know, maybe it is. Maybe this will be the year that in Tom versus Time, Time wins and Tom loses. But we're still looking at a guy who's had a solid season overall. So it's not like if he's fallen off, he hasn't fallen to the depths of anything as of yet. And he's made his money in December and January in the past. And I'm going to give him at least the opportunity to do so again in the future.
NBA rumors this week. The Clippers will pursue Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard in free agency. What are the chances, Robin, that the Clippers land both? And which would be a better pairing, Kawhi and KD or Kawhi and LeBron?
That's interesting. Well, first, of course, they want to get Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. Like they have cap space, right? Of course they want to get Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. It's weird that that's a news story to me. Do I think the chances are good? Yeah, no, I wouldn't say they're good. Do I think they're non-existent? No, I don't think they're non-existent either. I think what this really tells you is the Clippers are emerging as a destination. They have changed ownership. They have changed the front office. They still play in a desirable market. They are now in the midst of a makeover. And the makeover will be complete as soon as they land one of these star guys, which is coming. It may not be this offseason, but it's coming. The Clippers are going to be a legitimate place to play. As far as pairings go, maybe Durant and Kawhi would be a slightly better pairing simply because Kawhi is an isolation player and you kind of got to give him the ball to let him do his things in that regard. And LeBron is a little bit more ball dominant than KD. But I feel like that asking that question is like a sly way, not from you, but in general, is a sly way to try and make it about, you know, people don't want to play with LeBron or that kind of conversation again. I think he would work fine in either place, and both guys would adjust to that accordingly. But there's a certain aspect of Kawhi Leonard's game that kind of reminds me of Kobe, to be honest. Offensively, he's a lot like Kobe Bryant. So he isn't going to thrive as much off the ball as with the ball in those isolation situations.
Two more here real quick. First, these are always fun. Shaq said this week he thinks his Lakers could beat today's Warriors. Steph Curry says he's dead wrong. What say you?
That's one of my favorite hypotheticals because Shaq would obviously clobber Golden State inside. And I'm talking about peak Warriors. I'm not talking about this year's Warriors. Let's talk the peak version of the team. He would crush them. It would be like a scene from the movie where like the Hulk is running down the hallway and the buildings are bursting and the bad guys are flying off of him. That would be Shaq against the Warriors on one side. But people neglect the other side of the court. And on the other side of the court, I think Shaq would have a lot of trouble staying on the floor. I don't know if he's playable defensively against Golden State because they would put him in the high action and make him have to guard in space. So ultimately, I think what, you know, because the era changes, Warriors trade a few more threes for twos and wind up winning.
And finally, you've brought it up a couple times this morning. You loved it. Sony Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, solid weekend start, $36 million at the box office. Who's your favorite Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse?
Ooh. I mean, look, I grew up with Peter Parker as Spider-Man, right? So that's always going to be Spider-Man to me. But in general, I would say sometimes when there's a change like that, like you have like a little bit of a backlash because, you know, oh, well, this was the character I grew up with. Miles Morales, I totally see being, you know, a young kid's favorite Spider-Man. He, you know, it's cool in the sense that it's a fresh take on the story. Obviously, he has a different background than Peter Parker, you know, from an ethnic standpoint, as far as, you know, where his parents come from and everything. So I think it's super cool to have Miles Morales and Peter Parker both available as a Spider-Man. And as a testament to that, you know, my son's four. He already knows both guys, and he likes both guys. And yesterday we went to the comic shop to pick up Miles Morales' Spider-Man number one, which is a new book they put out. And I was reading it to him before bed last night. So I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but I grew up on Peter Parker as Spider-Man. With that said, I totally love Miles Morales' Spider-Man as well. It's one of the reasons the movie works so well. And you see why Spider-Man has been so endearingly popular. He's relatable to kids, and his message is a good one. I'll be back with more messages next week. Same Robin time, same Robin channel, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.